Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to our program. When we were on the air last week, the war in Iraq was basically still within its first day of conflict. We are now 8 days into a conflict that doesn't appear to have any immediate end in sight. The Bush administration is now warning us, preparing us for the fact that this war may drag on for months. We are deeply saddened by this turn of events. We were against this war. We see it as quite unnecessary. So does most of the world. So does a significant percentage of the American public. Once we go to war, the nation generally tends to rally around our officials. This, to a point, is a good thing. But I think we need to stress at this point in time that the potential for this war to become a very divisive matter is extremely worrisome. Those of us old enough to remember the Vietnam conflict know how this tore the nation apart. The same thing may happen with the war in Iraq. And I think we would do well to clarify a few points. To be against the war is not to be against the young American men and women in uniform who are doing their job as directed by the command authority in this country. It is possible, I think, to be supportive of men and women in uniform and at the same time be against the conflict. We would prefer that they not be there at all. We would prefer that they not be in harm's way at all. Going to war is a very serious business. It is sometimes necessary. I do not believe that this war is necessary. I hope it can be brought to an end as quickly as possible. Our heart goes out to the families of those who have been killed in the war already, Americans, British, Iraqi citizens. In the course of this program, we're going to include some moments of political satire. Some may find that to be inappropriate in a time of war, but the way we see it, if something is preposterous, if something's in need of change, then we think satire may be the most effective and rapid way to demonstrate what we're trying to say. I think sometimes we can say more in 1 minute of satire than you can in 10 minutes of speech making. So let's clarify this in no uncertain terms. This show and the people associated with it are supportive of American men and women in uniform. But we are not supportive of the war effort. During the first Gulf War back in 1991, there were numerous bumper stickers that sprouted all across this country saying, "I support our troops." The implication was that if you supported our troops, you supported our policy, and they're not the same thing. Let's keep that clear. I had lunch last week with Gary Chu, who talked on our show a bit about the Oscars, which we will actually get to because the Oscars have certainly become politicized over this issue. And Gary, who himself is a veteran of the armed forces, has put an American flag upside down in the window of his car, which is the sign of distress. Next to the distressed American flag, Gary put the words, "Troops, yes, Bush, no," which I think summarizes the sentiment pretty well in 4 words. Now, to give you an example of how wrong things can go in times of, war, in terms of expressing yourself, before the war even began, a man in Albany, New York, was arrested for wearing a t-shirt that said, "Peace on Earth and Give Peace a Chance." Stephen Downs, 61, was shopping at a mall when security guards told him to remove the shirt. Downs, who just had the shirt made at the mall, refused. The guards summoned police officers who threatened to charge Downs with trespassing. He said to them, "All right then, arrest me if you have to." And they put him in handcuffs and took him away. If that isn't a sign of how wrong things can go in this country, I don't know what is. And that was before the war began. War inevitably inflames passions. I have in front of me an email and an article taken off the web referring to the Oscars. A retired U.S. Marine Corps individual sent out an email proposing that it was time for the silent majority to take a stand to show the world that we support our troops. He suggested boycotting the Oscars, saying, "I believe that if the celebrities feel they can protest, we can protest them." In my other hand, I have a call for boycotting the Oscars from Nikki Fink of the LA Weekly for a different reason. It was suggested that we need to kick the infotainment conglomerates and companies who advertise with them where it hurts the most in the wallet. Boycott the Oscars. The politics of the Oscars are worth going into, and we will do that probably in our third segment of the program. In 1917, Senator Hiram Johnson of California, I believe Hiram Johnson was also at one point the governor of California, made the statement that the first casualty when war comes is truth. It's a very famous quote. I didn't know that it came from someone who served right here in Sacramento, from whom I believe a high school is named. But I think it summarizes so well what history's demonstrated. Case in point, we told you some months back about a famous example in the first Gulf War in 1991. One of the technologic heroes of that war seemed to be the Patriot missile. The U.S. Army claimed at first that the Patriot had intercepted 45 of 47 Iraqi Scud missiles. Later analysis of the videotapes indicated that target hits were rare indeed. Of 33 Patriots fired, 25 were complete misses, while the other 8 might have done some damage. But even this latter speculation couldn't be proved. An MIT study indicated that there is literally no evidence of destruction of a Scud warhead. An Israeli Air Force study agreed with that MIT study. When it seemed overwhelmingly clear what the Army claimed to be intercepts were questionable, Brigadier General Robert Drolet explained that President Bush had not lied to the press and the public when he described that, according to Bush, 41 of 42 Scuds had been intercepted. He had not lied to the press and public. He'd simply used a different definition of the word intercept. According to the U.S. Army, intercept did not mean destroyed. It simply meant a Patriot and Scud passed in the sky. When we talked about that last on the show, it was old news. But may I quote to you from Reuters News Service, March 22nd, as follows. Patriot missiles brought down a missile believed to be Iraqi, which flew close to a U.S. military camp in northern Kuwait early on Sunday, U.S. military officer said. Reuters correspondent Kieran Murray, with units of the 101st Airborne Division at Camp New York, said there had been no air raid warning, but the missile, believed to be a Scud, was shot out of the air. The first casualty when war comes is truth. Hiram Johnson, 1917. The story that I have to comment on is the fact that hours into the conflict, hours into the bombing, apparently a cruise missile was launched at a building where it was believed Saddam Hussein was located. When the building was blown up, there was speculation that Saddam had been killed in the first few hours of the war, that the Iraqi command had in effect been decapitated. Within hours of this, however, Saddam, or a man looking remarkably like Saddam, appeared on Iraqi television to deliver a speech. Now, I'm not an expert in such things, but it looked like Sodom to me. Yet, U.S. officials were saying that the speaker may not really be Sodom at all, but rather one of the dictator's many body doubles. When you went onto the web to investigate this rather startling claim, it was said that, well, the NSA will analyze the speaker's voice, much the way they do with the authenticated audio cassettes purported to contain segments by Osama bin Laden, and they have facial recognition software that might be able to tell. And of course, in the wake of September 11th, we've heard about the possibility of putting this, you know, facial recognition technology on the streets of America to pick up terrorists, pluck them out of the crowd as they walk by, apparently. Yet here we have a national leader in a TV studio, well-lit, addressing the nation, and there was great doubt as to whether it might be Sodom or a so-called body double. It seems to me that many of our senior analysts in the Bush administration perhaps watched a little too much X-Files and Mission Impossible when growing up. I was even more astounded when, after Sodom addressed the TV cameras for a second time Monday morning, Baghdad time, the Bush administration was still not copping to the fact that, well, it looks as though he's still alive. It took them till Tuesday, March 26th, to finally agree that we don't have to do the voice analysis. We think that was Sodom. If this is the kind of uncertainty that would surround video cameras and software recognition technology being placed all over this country, I think that's one expenditure we should rethink. I have been, in the first days of the war, quite unimpressed with the news coverage in this country. I think that the National Public Radio has done a pretty decent job, and community radio stations have done, in many cases, an excellent job. Right here on KDVS on Tuesday, I don't know whether you caught Counterspin, a fine program on the current state of war coverage and how in America we just don't seem to be getting a lot of the news that they are getting overseas. We finally saw, at least over the weekend, actual pictures of what was going on in Iraq. The major networks seem to show you a skyline, a rising plume of smoke, the occasional explosion, but no people. We've been told that reporters have been embedded in units all over Iraq, and they will have unprecedented access to what's going on. However, it's been quite clear to a lot of people from the beginning that the military would be instituting censorship over reporting. This has proven to be true, and I think the nation is very ill-served by it. There was an article in the paper about a woman who observed her son, not on American TV. She observed her son on Filipino television, which was using footage out of Iraq, showing her son identifying himself after being captured by Iraqi troops. It's often been said that in Vietnam, that the public turned against the war because it was brought into their living rooms. Well, it seems to be a priority of the military ever since Vietnam to make sure that war doesn't come into our living rooms. But we live in an information age, and if the rest of the world is seeing the image of a man captured by Iraqi troops, I think that Americans are probably entitled to the same images. And by the way, I want to put a plug in for some intelligent radio I've heard on KVMR, operating out of Nevada City, Grass Valley. They're certainly worth listening to if you're in the area, and I think that we are too. Dr. Andy Jones, here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology, has been doing a very good job in what I've caught in recent weeks. And I should also mention Gil Medavoy's program on Saturday afternoons is, as always, excellent. It's on from 3 to 6, I believe. And Dr. Andy's, I should plug him as well, is in the same time slot as us, 5 to 6 p.m. every Wednesday. And now, joining us again via the telephone is White House spokesman Yuri Fleischman. Mr. Fleischman, what's the story with our Turkish allies moving across their border?
We'd prefer not to comment on that, except to say that we feel the elimination of turkey from the menu of the Congressional Dining Room, which was proposed by Congressman Bob Ney, is way too premature.
you've been able to decide, I gather, that it really was Saddam on those broadcasts on Iraqi television.
We now believe it is. However, there was reasonable doubt about the identity of the alleged Saddam seen on those transmissions.
But he did have the same walrus mustache.
Uh-huh.
And the same dimpled chin.
Yeah.
And the same ears.
Well, can't argue with you there.
And he spoke with the same accent, I gather, as the Iraqi president.
Well, we had human intelligence that he looked more like a Saddam double.
But really, isn't an exact double kind of a preposterous proposition?
Maybe preposterous in your book, but not in ours. Well, our other theory was that an actor may have used a vulcanized rubber Saddam mask.
Like on the old Mission Impossible?
Exactly. It's amazing what can be done with makeup these days.
But, Mr. Fleischman,
yes.
They used actors to play those roles. They didn't really put people in rubber masks.
Come again?
Well, you don't think that Martin Landau really wore a George Chakiris mask on the show, do you?
Well, I always thought
No, they used George Chakiris. Then they shot a scene where Landau pulled off a supposed rubber mask.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
I can't say with certainty that the Office of Homeland Security was able to account for the whereabouts of actor Martin Landau during those Iraqi TV broadcasts.
So I guess it isn't all duct tape and plastic.
And the other possibility, by the way, was pre-taping of the message by Saddam. This still remains a viable consideration.
But now, why would Saddam pre-tape TV broadcasts to be used after he's killed?
Well, a myriad of reasons. And for one, he'd love to get back at us, I'm sure, by pretending he's still alive.
I guess you were confused because he didn't get more specific in those speeches?
Well, Saddam said nothing definitive at all in those broadcasts.
Well, how specific does he need to be?
Well, if he'd said something about, say, the Oscars, that'd be one thing. I mean, but not once did he mention it at all. No comment on Adrian Brody's upset win. Even Michael Moore went unquoted. You know, come on.
You know, some people have proposed that we put cameras up with face recognition programs to be used on America's city streets and in our airports to spot random terrorists.
Yes.
My question is, why didn't that technology work when a national leader goes into a well-lit TV studio and broadcasts his face?
He was wearing glasses.
I see. Well, please keep us updated on the dead and or fake Saddam hypotheses.
We will.
Last week, the Pentagon was saying that our biggest problem might be how to manage the 50,000 Iraqi troops that were sure to surrender in the first few days.
Well, we still have our hopes.
The military has also reported that its smart bombs have been extremely accurate.
Well, they have been able to take out several palaces with extreme precision.
Why blow up palaces?
Well, Saddam might use them as a refuge. I'm sure you can understand that. So we deployed smart bombs into his study, Turkish bath, billiard room, tanning booth, and indoor lap pool. I mean, we've been very thorough on this.
How much do those bombs cost?
Well, freedom has a high cost, Douglas.
Oh, how high?
$100,000 to smarten up a bomb. 1 million to smarten missiles, but these are very smart missiles. The PhDs of ordnance.
By the way, the initial cost of the war have now hit $75 billion.
Yes.
And how do you envision, you know, borrowing all this money?
Well, that's simple. We're thinking of utilizing the considerable built-up equity in the White House to get a line of credit.
Second mortgage, I guess.
Yeah, same concept. We're going to refi and take it from there. It could be several million, maybe even up to a billion. Who knows?
Yeah, final question. How is the coalition going?
The coalition of the willing is growing. We just added the Marshall Islands.
Oh, America's ballistic missile and hydrogen bomb testing ground.
Well, the Marshallese have seen the good that comes of their territory being used for target practice by our military.
Yeah, what good did the Marshallese get out of it?
Well, Kwajalein, jewel of the Marshall Islands, now is the only 12-lane bowling alley between Guam and Honolulu. And, I might add, they have a full 18-hole peewee golf park.
Well, if only Iraqi citizens knew what blessings we might bestow.
Exactly, exactly. And by the way, the coalition has just been joined by Macau, too, which graciously sent us 8 tons of fortune cookies. They all said, just win, baby, and I just thought that was just a nice touch.
It kind of sounds to me like they were maybe a canceled order for the Oakland Raiders Super Bowl victory party.
Might explain the silver and black packets of soy sauce.
Well, we certainly all hope this war can be brought to a close as soon as possible.
Definitely. We are nearer the beginning than the end, but we are fastly approaching the middle, and we'd like to think we can see light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, we'd like to think that too, Mr. Fleischman.
No, thanks for having me on your show.
All right. Well, please come again.
I will.
You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDBS 90.3 FM. I'm Douglas Everett. I think it's worth reminding you that freedom of speech is one of our most cherished freedoms, and that even in time of war, a little bit of satire can be a good thing.